This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
This evening, think that some more things have changed irrevocably in Scotland since we locked down on the 20th of March 2020. And if so, what are those things? Or if things haven't changed, what things should change?
We'll all be too polite unless you ask people, Andrew.
Leslie, go first.
Oh, well, okay. I'm not meaning to. I'm just meaning I could sense the void. Do you want to, you two girls want to go first? Charlotte, Katrina.
Go ahead, Leslie.
I mean, there's so much. It's kind of a bit hard to know where to start. But just one interesting thing. I hadn't realised that one day, you know, you've singled out a day there, the 18th of September, 2014. And it's funny because like the 20th of March is not as embedded in my mind. But when I was looking for a day that had a sort of matching sense of history about it, actually, it was May the 25th, funnily enough, because that same day, George Floyd was killed in America and Dominic Cummings stood in the Rose Garden and lied through his teeth. And yeah. In that moment, I think lots of people who had received views about many things, about the use of power, the abuse of power, racism, worth, value, lying, governance. That changed for a lot of people that day for those various reasons. And the repercussions of that day, those two events, have kind of worked their way through our culture. And the ripples are still being felt. So of course, now that sort of feels like I'm suggesting that sudden lockdown and the loss of 40,000 people at least across Britain doesn't register. And of course it does. So there's loads of things that have, I mean, there's a big state at the moment working right now. Who'd have thought? Delivered by Tories. It makes you almost sort of choke on your cornflakes to have to say it. But suddenly things which were not possible have become possible. And in fact, nobody's even arguing about it anymore. Things which were catastrophic failures have been quietly dumped by the Tories, like they dumped the debt accumulated by their privatised NHS trusts in England, practically the second day. I mean, good time to get rid of unsustainable structures that they'd created. And of course, as the pandemic rolled on, it became so apparent that their privatisation, their misplacement of the market above all, above society, not subject to society, all the things that we've been campaigning about for many years, suddenly we see the horrific impact of the truth of what we've been saying all that time. Now, I see, the Tories have suddenly discovered that actually privatising the probation service wasn't really a very good idea either, so it's been dumped. So, you know, many things have had to change, the big state being the principal one. But of course, that one's not going to last very long. And I guess the other thing, just not to hog everything, because I'm sure some folk will want to say similar things. But the other thing, I suppose, would be real human value. I mean, we have been forced to value superstars, ephemera, bought things, collectibles, all sorts of things that really since the COVID outbreak have suddenly looked completely worthless and irrelevant and just passing. And at the same time, there's been a complete reevaluation of where value lies in our society. Quite obviously it's key workers, quite obviously it's people who care. And yet we've got a society which so crushingly doesn't even recognize those things as values. And the huge realignment that's necessary is the thing that will now have to be undertaken in whatever way Scotland moves forward.
Leslie, yeah, thank you. That's fantastic. Katrina, please.
I would agree with all of that. I would say that over the last few months, we've seen a comparable surge in community spirit and community organising as we saw around the independence referendum, when we saw people who'd never really been engaged in politics before suddenly feeling like they had a stake in the country's future. And this time it's not around a political goal, it's around our communities. And I'm sure everyone here knows about some of the volunteer groups that have sprung up all around the country in their own neighbourhoods to provide practical assistance to vulnerable people. And I know that that's been a lifeline to lots of people who've previously been isolated and vulnerable. So I think that would be the thing that I would pick out as being the most profound change since the 20th of March when lockdown happened. But it's also what Leslie said about that later date, the 25th, when George Floyd was killed by American police and when Dominic Cummings so blatantly lied to the public. That was almost a trigger for that community organising to turn into direct action and into social change. And we've seen that in the Black Lives Matter movement, not just in Scotland, but across the world. Although in Scotland, I think it's really interesting how it suddenly pushed forward the discussion on Scotland's relationship with race and Scotland's history of interaction with the slave trade. But I think also that community organising on a more local level has actually delivered real change for people that didn't exist before the lockdown happened. And if I can give you an example, I'm a member of the Tenants Union Living Rent, and we've seen a big increase in our membership since the beginning of lockdown. And unfortunately, that's because many more people are facing financial hardship and they need our member defence teams to help them negotiate with landlords and to hold landlords to account for failing to provide the kind of hygiene standards that we require in a pandemic. But that's also managed to deliver lasting change. We've managed to successfully work with the Scottish Government to end evictions for the period of the lockdown and to deliver more protections for tenants on hygiene. And that would never have happened if not for people becoming involved in the campaign. So that's what I hope will be the legacy of lockdown, not the bad things, but the good things, the community organising, the social movements that have been pushed forward and the change that they're able to deliver.
Fantastic. Thanks, Katrina. Now, Charlotte.
What people have said already, I absolutely agree with. Okay. But I think that if we want to use the recent events to reinvigorate the independence movement, which I think aspects of the Black Lives movement that we've seen on the streets all over the world, if you like, mirror the feeling of 2014 and the referendum campaign. Absolutely incredible energy, youth, internationalist, very, very positive, very inclusive in who was in the streets, very visible. The only campaigning at the moment that is visible is the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think we need to learn from them. And as a movement in Scotland in particular, we need to draw those people who are motivated against injustice and against racism into the independence movement and actually show that in Scotland, if you want to make progress on these issues, you have to be part of the independence movement. That independence in Scotland has something to offer people who are wanting to see immediate change, and not just change promised in the future, but change now. If you think about the fantastic things that have already happened, I mean, in states in America, they're talking about defunding the police. We've never had anything as radical as that proposed for the police in this country. And yet it's actually happened in front of our eyes in America, of all places. So the sort of ideas and energy from that movement, I think we have to think about incorporating into the independence movement now, if possible, but certainly after lockdown, but also on COVID-19. I think that the deep inequalities in Scottish society have been come into sharp focus over COVID-19. If you think about the areas of Scotland that are most affected by this horrible disease, it is the poorest, most deprived areas of Scotland. We're talking about Inverclyde, we're talking about West Dumbarton and parts of Glasgow and other places. And we've known these things for years. And yet the poverty ingrained in these areas doesn't seem to shift no matter what anyone does. And I think that the positivity of the Black Lives Matter movement, this feeling that enough is enough and things have to change and we won't be satisfied with platitudes, we have to apply to society in Scotland post-COVID. Bring the energy of what's been happening. I mean, Andrew said rightly, I've been involved in a COVID-19 action group. You wouldn't believe the ideas and the energy online of people trying to make sure that they and their families are safe, particularly when they're going back to work. How do we organise? Because people don't trust the leadership at the moment. And I know that in Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP's reputation taking us through the COVID crisis in Scotland has been enhanced. There's no doubt about that, particularly compared to Boris Johnson, but that's not very difficult. But nevertheless, the disease proportionately has killed as many people in Scotland as in England. The care home crisis was as bad in Scotland as in England. And therefore, urgently coming out of lockdown, we have to look at health, we have to look at care, we have to look at the priorities for the health system. It should be about people, it should be about public health, it shouldn't have been about individual solutions to the health issues that still plague Scottish populations. So there's so much, I think, that's been opened up for discussion. But a very positive way to look forward is to bring the energy of these campaigns from the Black Lives Matter movement and the independence movement and the Green movement together. This also gives us an opportunity post-COVID to restructure the economy and make it much more greener. We don't have a choice in these things. If we don't do these things, we're either going to die or our planet is going to die. So these are quite stark issues facing us very, very quickly. And I'm quite optimistic about the outcomes if we in the independence movement manage to harness all these issues together and get back out in the streets campaigning very quickly at the first opportunity.
Charlotte, that's great. Thank you. We will undoubtedly touch more and at greater length on Black Lives Matter and the campaigning and the issues that they have brought to the forefront worldwide and in Scotland. We'll touch on that in a moment. But at the end of what you were saying, you also touched on climate change. Many of us will have seen the recent Peter Ogden cartoon, which shows a tiny palace of Westminster threatened by a monster COVID-19 wave, which is followed closely behind by an even bigger wave with Brexit on it, which is in turn dwarfed by a third enormous wave that has climate change written on it. How do you feel that we might be able to surf, if that's not a terrible metaphor, but to deal with those waves, those successive waves in Scotland?
I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for us. I mean, unfortunately, the climate emergency is not getting any less urgent just because there's something else having a go at wiping us out. The climate emergency remains, as it has done for some time, the biggest threat to our future, not only as a country, but as a planet. And the one positive that I would say is that over the course of the lockdown, we've seen people travelling less using unsustainable transport methods. We've seen ways of work shifting to work, people working from home, to people travelling around the country less. And there is now a real opportunity to create something better, to create something that is green and sustainable, an economy which is based not on unsustainable measures like it has been in the past, but to actually put that front and centre of our economic recovery and our the new society that we're going to have to build once the lockdown finally ends. I mean, that's the biggest wave, but the middle-sized wave of Brexit, it's absolutely unthinkable that the UK government is pushing ahead with Brexit in the midst of a pandemic. And that today, Michael Gove has now confirmed that they will not be seeking an extension, which essentially means that they are 100% prepared to crash out of the EU with no deal at the end of this year. That's completely irresponsible. In terms of, even just from my perspective as a small business owner, small businesses cannot recover from the pandemic by going into Brexit. It's just not possible. And the fact that the UK government is prioritising that at this time shows that their priority is not to recover sustainably or to make any positive changes out of the pandemic. It's to continue to push their anti-Europe agenda on at any cost.
I'll just say that I think we need to just get very organised very quickly. There is no coping with this. Yeah, we can cope with it. But, I mean, is that all we aspire to do, really? To keep mitigating, keep trying to kind of get a little policy that'll try to kind of offset this appalling catastrophe that we predicted accurately for 10 years that has now come to pass. And watching the serial waves stack up and line up to come right in, COVID, Brexit, climate crisis, all of them kind of, we know that Boris Johnson's government is completely incapable of running any kind of effective campaign against any of these difficulties, not just because of his kind of political outlook, which probably most people watching this kind of abhor, but because he is actually incompetent. I mean, cannot get systems working, cannot get planning working, cannot talk to people, will not talk to people, will not engage beyond his bubble, and so on. So here we are facing all of this, and there is no point. I mean, there's a thing that's said sometimes of women who keep trying to cope with too much, and the advice is drop the ball. Don't even catch the ball and set it down, just drop the ball. And we're at the stage where we have to get independence as a campaign articulated, up and running again very clearly. If the SNP cannot do it because they are involved in government, they have a decision that has been taken by their very small coterie of leadership to exclude political debate during this period, then it kind of shines the light on a big gap that has been there since 2014, which is some kind of independence leadership that's separate from the SNP. I mean, quite obviously, it is still the right of the First Minister, the leader of the SNP, the leader of the third largest party in Britain, to advance the case for separating from the United Kingdom. But the movement has got to get to a stage where we are formulating, I mean, as Commonweal have done today with their resilience plan, that's a plan that should be being proposed by the Scottish government. It's great to see that if nothing is forthcoming at the moment, people are moving ahead and they are making their own plans and they're publishing them. But Commonweal is not the government. It doesn't have agency in this unless their ideas are embraced and discussed and debated, as if we could act, as if we could drop the ball and just say, we are now moving consciously as a society to a situation where we have to take control of all levers now. We need home rule now to avoid what's coming down the line. And I wish we could look to a future very shortly where the extraordinary communication skills of Nicola Sturgeon, who can explain the most difficult things really clearly, concisely, in the same language as the electorate she's speaking to, can clearly plan, can get her head around some of the most difficult constructs of science. If that could all be applied to explaining why we need a different constitutional setup to move forward from here on in and not just wait for the next big wave to hit, I think we would now be in a very, very strong position.
Leslie, I think that's absolutely, absolutely right. I was going to follow up what Leslie was saying with a question we've had from the audience, and I was going to direct it to you, but we've got a flow going here. So following on from what Leslie was just saying, Graham Darkhorse Lowe asks, radical times mean radical actions are needed. Just how radical can Scotland afford to be to get momentum and realistic traction to the independence movement, considering that we're still under the rule of Westminster and hurtling towards a no-deal Brexit?
Well, what I would say is that, following on from what Leslie's just said, there has to be more vim and vigour, if you like, from the SNP leadership. That, as she said, it lacks imagination. There's a movement out here waiting to go for independence, but you need to say to people what you're going to be fighting about. What are you going to achieve with independence? Is it going to be a better Scotland? Is it going to mitigate the effects of climate change in a positive way and create green jobs? Is it going to take steps to make sure that young people will have jobs at the end of this COVID disaster? Is it going to take steps to nationalise social care? Is it going to take steps to reform housing and land use. We've had a lot of talk about these things and yet nothing really concrete has happened. And people who want to invest in independence need to know that that is going to happen, that that society they're going to fight for in an election and then win at the end is going to be worth that effort. And I think the SNP leadership at the moment does not see things that way. I think if they look at the Black Lives Matter movement, even the demonstrations that have taken place in Scotland have been overwhelmingly young. I mean, I've been on some of them and I'm not young. I'm sure lots more people would like to be on them if we didn't have to socially distance at them. So you have to relate to the layer of people who want change. You know, lots of people are very comfortable in Scotland at the moment. They've done okay over the last 12 years of austerity. We want change for positive reasons, not just because we don't like the English or anything like that. And therefore, if the SNP, I agree with Leslie, and I think this is quite urgent for All Under One Banner. Why does All Under One Banner exist at all? It's because we weren't getting the leadership from the SNP to achieve what we want, which is independence. Independence on its own, in and of itself, will not necessarily deliver the things that I want to see. But I don't think we're going to get them without independence. If you look at the, as Leslie said and Katrina said, the Westminster government is full of sociopathic, old-style imperialists and racists who are going to see Brexit as some sort of harking back to the glory days of Britain. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. But in order to achieve that, they're going to have to attack the conditions of ordinary people. They're going to have to accept trade deals with America, letting chlorinated chicken, etc. We've got a way of stopping that if we get independence for Scotland, but only if we persuade more people than we managed to persuade last time. And I'm not convinced that the SNP leadership, as it is at the moment, is going to do that. And that's why we're having this meeting. We want to shape this movement and get new impetus into it, to bring more people into it, to bring those changes about. And so I think all those issues are very important to bring into it. And before the lockdown, one of the biggest issues people were demonstrating about, apart from independence, was climate change. This is something that matters to people. It's real and immediate. We've got a task with, for example, de-investing in fossil fuels in Scotland. And that's going to take argument and persuasion. Is the SNP up to doing that? I'm not sure if they are.
I would just like to say that I don't think that All Under One Banner and the other grassroots community organisations that support independence exist because we don't think that the SNP is doing enough. Under Nicola Sturgeon's leadership in the last few months, support for independence is at its highest level ever. And that's not because things are so much worse. It's because they believe in the steady, reliable leadership that she's provided through this global catastrophe that is the COVID-19 crisis. And she has very much demonstrated that Scotland and Scotland's First Minister is able to stand on the world stage and reassure the population, as Leslie said, with their communication skills, but also look to international examples in order to continue to work to not just to work with the UK government, but to work separately to the UK government where necessary in order to protect public health. I think the reason we have organisations like All Under One Banner and the reason we've seen grassroots-led organisations, particularly media organisations like Independence Live, who are organising this event, but also other new media organisations like The National, for example, or Scotia or Broadcast Scotland that have sprung up, is because people recognise that in order to deliver independence, we can't just rely on people from one political party. It has to be a broad spectrum of people from all across society working towards our shared goal, building on our common values. And I think it's important to remember that we don't want to have an independence movement that is dominated by one political party. We want it to be a broad spectrum of people that share that common goal.
Thanks, Katrina. That a great answer to the question moves us on very well. One wee thing, I'm getting a couple of folks saying, can you speak a little bit louder or closer to your mic? But I could hear you fine here, but I'm seeing a couple of folks. I think having spoken for half an hour, I think we might seek now to take some questions from those who are with us in Zoom. I can see that there are four hands up. To make this work equitably, I'll ask two and then two. So firstly, I can see that Sarah Chung and Kyle have their hands up. So we'll go to Sarah first and see if she would like to ask her question. We'll just unmute her.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Hi, how are you all doing? So obviously, well, Katrina will probably know about this because she knows that this will probably be coming. But obviously, I'm mostly concerned about, obviously, with Brexit coming along, is what I'm massively frustrated is the fact that even now is June, the transition period is ending towards the end of this year. What I'm worried about, I just started a new job, and what I'm concerned and worry about is that, and it's now, and people will say impending, this is actually going to happen, because it's now been mentioning it, a pandemic recession will happen. This will be the worst since the end of World War II. And I'm just like thinking, would it not be, would all under one banner not actually consider pointing out, saying like, here are the positives of considering an independent Scotland. Your jobs will be all protected. Your livelihoods will all be protected. Maybe not all so. But basically, that is what I am really concerned about. Can we not actually like show this or highlight this in any sort of way? Because those who are graduating this year, chances are they're not going to find a job. I graduated from the University of Glasgow at 2012, and I couldn't really find a job anywhere whatsoever. We were still feeling the impact of the Eurozone crisis. So would all under one banner not consider just showing the economic positives, what it would be like in an independent Scotland? Because I could see that, you know, persuading people to actually try and support an independent Scotland about it. But yeah, that's me from the economic sense.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. We'll take one more question. And if I can summarise your question a little bit, I think what I heard you saying was that can we not highlight the either the economic peril of remaining in the Union or the economic benefits of an independent Scotland? That was what I took you to be saying. Can we also now hear from Kyle? We'll unmute him too and we'll get his question.
Oh, it's Kyle from Dundee. Yeah, it's more about the sort of class argument that I think some people have not mentioned. I think Charlotte touched on it, to be fair. But I remember 5.5 years ago when the Scottish referendum was first held in 2014, and Alex Salmond and Alistair Darling had a debate, the first debate, and it was mostly on economic question about the currency. And most people thought Alistair Darling won that, for better, for worse, whatever. But the next week after that, is when there was a big swing for the Yes movement. And it was when Alistair Darling and Salmond had a debate, and Salmond mostly focused on class, on poverty, inequality, etc., etc. And most people thought that he dominated that. That was when the Yes movement really took a big swing. That's when it looked like we actually might have a chance of winning, because before that, it looked like no was always going to win, in my opinion. In terms of the S&P leadership, it is not progressive enough in terms of class issues. Last month, the Labour Party, and I'm not a Labour Party member at all. I did vote Corbyn last election, but the Scottish Labour Party had quite a good amendment in the Scottish Parliament just last month. And the S&P sided with the Tories to vote that down, which was inexcusable, in my opinion. But another thing that really the S&P, if they've got any sort of credence on class issues, is they should nationalise all care homes in Scotland, especially after the deaths that have happened.
Thanks, Kyle. So you're talking in particular in connection with the class arguments that have been a feature of politics in Scotland for more than a century, and rightly so. And in particular, you've got a point there that relates back to the current crisis, and in particular the nationalisation or renationalisation of the care sector, which, of course, as we know, is is developed and is operated in a way that is slightly different to south of the border, but in which so many of our friends and relatives, upon which so many of our friends and relatives rely. I'll go first to Leslie. We had two questions there. Any comments on either of those questions?
Yeah, the benefits of leaving the Union. Well, the first one, let's look at some of the reserve powers, and a huge one that's very rarely talked about, energy. It makes me just about scream to see the wasted opportunities that Scotland has with.
Naturally,
I mean, it sounds like a cliche now that we are the Saudi Arabia of renewable energy. I mean, we won't be for long unless we do something about it. But we can't. So many parts of what we need to move forward are controlled by Westminster. We don't control the grid. We don't control the subsidy regime. Community renewables, which have made massive differences to small communities around Scotland when they were able to do community hydro schemes, suddenly dried up because the Tories axed them in Westminster. There's huge possibilities for doing something quite new, which is local grids, where you don't need to work the way the old grid did, with the presumption that the little people at the edges have to be supplied from the centre. That's how the whole of Britain works, is that grid personified. You can have small, smart local grids which connect up local users, local suppliers of energy, without the need to keep moving everything to the centre. That would best be done by far more genuinely local control. We have the largest so-called local authority units in the developed world in Scotland. Nobody has larger units, not even England. So there's ways that if we could look at the future, we would have to be fixing a lot of the stuck problems: land, feudalism, lack of genuine local control. When Katrina, I think it was talking about the big change that has been in local, for sure. But then we discover that this local dimension that's become so vivid for most of us, for better and for worse, is the only dimension we have almost no control over whatsoever as punters. And that has to change. We could have local food distribution networks using local suppliers. I mean, glory be, this is like back to the way my mum's world would have been like, where you could point at a coup and you'd know, roughly speaking, the milk was going to come into the shop beside it, not too distant future. But we've become marketized again. The long distribution chains we've accepted. We have become like boiled frogs. Too many mixed metaphors and animals in this, I quite appreciate. But what we need to do is get those local distribution chains back in. And we could change the agriculture bill going through the Scottish Parliament right now, which is trying to look at how to step in with the end of the common agricultural policy subsidies, what new outlooks to have. Well, here's a new outlook to have, that you get subsidy for creating local food supplies. And that can be communities that get it or farmers that get it. And that's not being considered. So, of course, you know, there's huge possibilities about detaching ourselves from British defaults. And they are always big is beautiful, top down, devil take the hindmost, and the market runs society. That's what we could get rid of. That's what we could jettison away from and enable the outlooks we've been voting for a century. But we have to start doing some of that stuff with the powers that we've got to persuade people that it's doable. So I'd like to see a lot. That's why this matters so much, and why Commonweal's report is great, because it shows how many different things could be done now. These are the steps needed. I mean, seeing is believing for voters and for everyone else. And the converse is also true. Not seeing is doubting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Leslie. Good. Charlotte.
Yes. Talking about what Sarah was saying, basically you're talking about being able to persuade young people in Scotland that they have a future. And that's going to be vital. Coming out of this COVID crisis. And somebody mentioned in the chat about the beverage report. You've got to remember that after the Second World War, where the country had unbelievable debt and devastation, a welfare state and a health service was built. And it is completely ironic, tragically ironic, that the very same people who built and worked in that welfare state and health service are the ones who are dying in our care homes now, privatised care homes. That health service was dismantled almost from the beginning it was created. If people with long memories will remember the introduction of prescription charges, et cetera, et cetera. But we can do that again. There's nothing materially stopping us investing in the future of the country. Borrow to spend. My goodness, you're actually going to be charged by a bank to keep money in it. You're not getting interest for it now. Why not borrow and spend? Now, that takes a leap of faith from a government willing to do that. Is the SNP willing to do that? But also, there's another reason that you can persuade people it's in their interest to leave. One of the things that I would look forward to turning my back on is great British nationalism. And that's what Boris Johnson represents. And not just in Britain. The rest of the world is looking at the Westminster government aghast at how they have abandoned thousands of people to this COVID outbreak. They are the laughingstock of the world alongside President Trump. Do we really want to be the poodle attached to America? Hopefully there'll be great change coming to America as well. But we do not, as a country, deserve nor want to be tied to a Brexit Britain run by this right-wing Tory cabal. And that is a very good reason to want independence as well.
Thanks, Charlotte. That was great. Those are two great questions and some great input there. Thank you. I can see we've got three hands up at the moment, so I'll take the next two and we'll work through those questions as well. And I can see lots and lots of input and questions coming in from Facebook and coming into the chat functionality as well. So as I had expected, we've got lots of input and lots of interaction here. So the next two people who have their hands up that I can see are Dave Sherry and Kyron Van Sweden. So first we'll go to Dave. We'll just get Dave unmuted, and Dave, you can ask your question. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, everybody. Charlotte stole my thunder a wee bit because I noticed in the chat that somebody had mentioned the end of the Second World War and how we got the Beveridge Report and the National Health Service. And I was going to talk about that because actually at the time, I mean, I'm about as old as the National Health Service, and I can remember the benefits of the National Health Service. But I remember the story at the time where even the Tories, a man called Quentin Hogg said, if we don't give them reform, they'll give us revolution, because people weren't going to go back to the 1930s. My father and his uncles fought in the war, and they weren't fighting for the same things that Winston Churchill fought for. They were fighting to get rid of Hitler and to have a better world and not to go back to the world that they'd grown up in. And I think there's a feeling about that now. Although we're in lockdown, actually, two of the biggest mass movements have just been thrown up recently. There's been the climate change movement by young people and the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a global movement against racism. Now, I think, I appreciate that Nicola's steady Eddie, but it's no time for steady Eddie. We need to up the pace and make big changes. I certainly agree with Kyle's question about the care homes. A lot of the care homes are run for shareholders to make profits, not because of people's needs. When I was a kid, I grew up across the road from what was called the old folks' home. It was staffed by people who were in a trade union who were properly paid, and there was plenty of them. And my recollection of it was the old folk were looked after. God, that was in the late 1950s. You know, we've moved on since then. So the wherewithal to do it's there. I think we need to get a sense of that, raise our expectations. It's not simple. We can't just sit and wait on an election. We need to start changing things now. And the good thing about All Under One Banner is it's shown that it's able to mobilise hundreds of thousands of people. And I'm sure most of them have those kind of aims as well. That's the kind of Scotland they want. It's not just simply a constitutional change. It's a change in the priorities, the kind of society we live in. And I think that's what we need to echo. And that's what we need to take out of this lockdown and get back onto the streets, a real sense of purpose and change. And the idea that it from changes from the bottom up, it's not let it be handed down to us from Parliament. Let's force their hand. That's how did the panel feel about that?
Yeah, that sounds spot on. I'm kind of wondering in kind of strategic terms, Andrew, you know, how doable? When do you think we can get back to any kind of, you know, street presence, just as a matter of interest?
I'll talk very briefly from my own perspective. We're expecting to be making announcements in the next 2 weeks with regard to restarting what All Under One Banner does. We bear in mind, so very briefly, we thought very hard about the steps that we took to postpone this year's marches. We were ahead of the First Minister's announcement of lockdown by about half a day. We took that because we regarded our responsibilities to everybody in Scotland, not just those who come on the marches, but to everybody. We took those responsibilities very seriously. We also take our responsibilities to the movement and to those who come on the marches. And so we anticipate reflecting the gradual relaxation of lockdown rules over the next few months. We expect to reflect that and to be mobilising immediately it's possible and legal to do so, to be honest. And also we're exploring, very briefly, we're exploring actively other forms of activity. We've seen demonstrations, not marches, we've seen demonstrations from Black Lives Matter and others in Scotland already in the last week. And we are looking very closely at what they're doing, and we're working to begin to develop more approaches. So I'll stop talking now because this isn't meant to be me talking.
But it is meant to be. I mean, we're here and it's kind of a chance to strategize a little bit about what might happen. And I mean, to picking up the point from Dave there, the thing would be, I mean, we can all get back on the streets and we can have 100,000 out, but what does it say other than that 100,000 people socially distancing are managing to walk along and not bang into each other? Quite an achievement. But does something like All Under One Banner need to have a manifesto, need to have a strategy, need to have even 4-5 aims that people are marching with? Because otherwise it's a bit like the version of the mandate. We can get, you know, the SNP have won 6 elections since 2014. So soon we'll have a 7th. Great. You know, there's a whole mantelpiece full. And I'm not saying that's amazing. But in itself, it doesn't necessarily channel the mind and the public's mind as to what all these people have turned up to progress. And I wonder as well whether it needs, you know, it needs also all sorts of different kind of organization to put these to articulate almost exactly what you said there. We want changed priorities. We want human values top. We want to, all of what you've said there, we want to, I don't know if Colin will have already done, they probably have, a paper on nationalising elderly care. Will something be debated in the Scottish Parliament? I don't know. I might be behind the curve here. Katrina maybe is more switched on to that kind of thing. But if it's not, that's what the people want.
Pick up on that, Leslie. Yes, absolutely. Commonweal have put forward proposals for a national care service in the Common Home Plan and in the economic recovery plan that they've put forward this morning. And I actually put that to Shona Robinson, who is the chair of the Social Justice Commission, and it is something that they're going to be considering, the nationalisation of the care sector. And I think that is absolutely crucial. Both Dave and Kyle picked up on that we have a national health service. We should have a national care service. It should be focused on protecting elderly people, on delivering dignity at the end of life. It should be focused on ensuring that the skilled workers that care for our elderly, are some of our most vulnerable, are properly unionised, properly paid, properly looked after. And that should be an absolute priority for Scotland going forward. I mean, we have an ageing population. By the time I am old enough to go into a care home, it's likely that my generation will dwarf the younger generations. And this has just thrown that into stark relief. Also picking up on what Kyle said and what Dave said as well about the need for this to be a grassroots led organisation. And one of the things that was so good about the movement in 2014 was that it was grassroots led. What was shown in 2014 was the inequality between Scots and the rest of the UK. But what's been shown by this pandemic is the economic equality and the extent of economic inequality in this country. 950,000 people have applied for universal credit since the start of lockdown. So that's nearly a million people suddenly finding themselves without the bare minimum to get by. We have an opportunity now to change that. Independence can change that. We can make it so that everyone in Scotland has the confidence that no matter what happens in the world, pandemics, recessions, even the climate crisis, they can have the confidence that they will have a safe home, they will have food, they will have electricity, and they will have enough money to get by. That's what's really exciting about Common Real and about the proposal that they've put forward. I don't think we necessarily need more organisations. I think that we need to organise effectively and get behind the organisations that are putting forward these radical ideas for Scotland's future. And I would like to see organisations like All Under One Banner not coming up with their own ideas, not that that's a bad thing, but getting together with the other organisations that share our values and supporting Common Real, supporting this resilient economy plan and supporting the work that's already been done.
I'll interject very briefly again, just from the perspective of All Under One Banner. One of the outputs from the assembly that we held in Glasgow in February was precisely that. It was a request and a discussion and a conclusion that going forward, marches, once we are properly back on the streets, might begin to adopt a theme or an approach or a perspective. So we would have a march that focuses, for example, on Scottish NHS, a march that perhaps focuses on Trident and a range of issues that are important, and use that as a way of particularising but also focusing the people's minds on independence and the benefits of independence. I'll not take up any more time because I'm not the one who's supposed to be speaking here. What we've had Karen from Sweden's had her hand up for quite some time. Let's go to her if we can unmute her, and then we'll go to Charlotte for a response.
Hi, okay, so I'm convener of Yes Edinburgh North Leith and Leith SNP, and over the years that I've been campaigning with them, I've become frustrated with the talk about currency. We will not be independent as a country unless we have our own currency, and I think that's not widely understood within the Yes movement as a whole. So since lockdown, I've been becoming more and more concerned about the neoliberal narratives to do with after COVID, we'll have to have austerity to pay for COVID and everything that we've given out. And, you know, the grandchildren will have to pay for this. And this is economic nonsense, and this is the thing that keeps people fearful and makes them believe that we can't have nice things like a national health service or care homes for the elderly. So I was very concerned about this, and I'm in contact with other people that are very interested in the economics of independence. So I just wanted to address Leslie. I was listening to your podcast today and say that I've started an organisation called Modern Money Scotland with some other activists, and we are busy building the website for that just now, and it's to help people understand A, why they don't need to accept austerity, and B, how independence will mechanically work economically. We're busy with that just now. So I just want you to know that, you know, I'm not doing nothing. I'm busy doing that, and I think that's a particular thing that certain people are interested, both the activists and the people that are unsure about independence. They want to understand how it mechanically would work as far as currency is concerned.
Charlotte, can you any comments and any response to that?
Looking back at the 2014 campaign, correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember that it was the right wing, the people against independence, who were constantly going on about the currency and creating an issue where I really don't think there should have been any issue. As Scots, historically, the one thing that we were always good at, for better or worse, and quite often for worse, was banking. My goodness, some of the investment banks in the world today are named after the Scots that founded them. I don't think it's beyond the wit or the wisdom of an independent Scotland to have its own currency and to manage its own affairs in that way. I think that the problem was possibly some of the comments from the SNP at the time were to tie the currency to the pound. I think we don't have to do that. I think once we have our own levers of finance, then we can do what the country decides to do. I'm not bothered about that too much. However, I would absolutely agree with the speaker about the neoliberalism, and that has dominated the economic policies of Labour and Tory and governments in EU as well. It's finished. It's failed. It has failed to deliver for people, and COVID-19 has shown that to millions. And so therefore, we have to think of new ways of constructing how the country will be run. And in the first instance, I go back to what I said earlier, let's borrow money to spend it. It's not going to cost very much to do it under current circumstances. And to hell with the markets. That was neoliberalism. Will the market like it? How will the market respond? We don't have to worry about that if we've got the people behind us. Okay, so that's what I would say about that. But also, there are thousands of people who are online working away, particularly in the, as I've been doing in COVID-19, and organising people locally. A slogan for a previous campaign I was involved in was "Think global, act local." I mean, if you remember, some of you may remember, some of you may not, that we used to get things like milk and eggs delivered to our door. We didn't have to do a car journey to get them. Supermarkets for too long have dictated what our food chains were, where we get the money, how far the food comes, and how much it costs. How many of you have gone to a supermarket recently and found that the price of the food has gone up? Eh? Who's getting the profits from that? Not you and me, and not local producers. So all around us during this COVID lockdown, we've seen examples of how things could be run better. Things could be run locally for the benefit of local people and local producers. And that's something that we need to make sure continues after as well.
Thanks, Charlotte. Katrina, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, Charlotte, you're absolutely spot on. I think that the neoliberal agenda, which has been dominant in Scotland, in the UK and in the European Union over the last couple of decades, has been very successful for a handful of people at the top and has been a spectacular failure for the vast majority of us. And that needs to change. We need to see in Scotland, we need to see a radical, fair redistribution of wealth, and we need to make sure that Scotland's resources are turned towards public good. On the point of supply chains, particularly, being a cafe owner, this is something that I'm really, really concerned about. I'm very concerned about the distance that food travels to get on our plates. And I'm very concerned about the impact that that has on local economies. It's very, very bad for the environment, of course. But quite apart from that, when you have food being sold in supermarkets, who are able to use their power to just buy the cheapest food in order to make the most profit, then you see ridiculous things like berries being flown in from North Africa when we're half an hour's drive from Perthshire. It's absolutely ridiculous that has become the norm. And like you say, since the lockdown started, or since Charlotte said, sorry, since the lockdown started, the price of food has increased. Why should that happen when it's becoming more difficult to bring food long distances? Why has food not been replaced with the produce that is grown here in Scotland? So going forward, one of our priorities has to be to look at local wealth and local economies, to look at how local producers can have the foothold in our communities that supermarkets currently hold.
But then let's change procurement. You know, like at one fell swoop, we can talk about all these things. But there have been attempts to try to change some of the building blocks that keep pushing back those possibilities. There's a model, Preston did this, where they began to realise how much money was leaking out of Preston. It's a really deprived place in England. And they realised that the purchasing clout of the hospitals, the council, the university, the libraries, everything together was a massive pot of money that they could deliberately choose to spend locally. And that kind of procurement, you know, that is a huge failing, I'm afraid, in the Scottish government's part, because it's made procurement very difficult for any but the biggest companies to go in and win. We've still got this best value rubbish floating about, which has been like a blooming virus in our system for, you know, as long as I've been alive. John Swinney tried to put a regulation around saying that one's gone, but it's still the way everybody's working. And the procurement rules that are framed by the Scottish government still favour big is beautiful at every turn. So we need to have this straight out sort of debate here, because it's not good enough, and it's following defaults that we should have really examined very closely. I'd like to ask if we're even going to get that level of good debate in, I mean, how do we have that debate as a set of people? Because we're not even going to have an SNP conference this year, probably. There might well be a virtual one, but having had to report on SNP conferences for so long that I had different hair colour when I started, right? I'm not holding my breath that we're going to get anything like the thoroughgoing debate we need. And that's where, coming back to something that was mentioned earlier, you know, this one question, nationalised care homes, I don't know that it's actually really the place of the Social Justice Commission, that I have not actually seen knocking itself out with great radical proposals to date, to be bringing forward legislation. And the way Holyrood works, unless the SNP bring forward legislation, nothing happens. And we've seen that from a series of amendments the Greens have put forward that would have actually created some quite good new processes. So I would like to see the SNP bring forward a policy to debate nationalising care homes. And that would be a banner headline to Scots that this is the kind of future you're going to see, because we're going to debate how to start it now, even with the difficulties of COVID, even with the limited powers we've got. We know that's what you want us to discuss.
I have good news on that front. Firstly, the Social Justice Commission, which is wholly funded by the SNP, it's not funded as a Scottish Government organisation, it's not yet made any reports because it's still doing its first three consultations. So that's why it's not put forward any proposals. But it will be doing that, and that then it will be an opportunity for the Scottish Government to bring forward legislation, as you say. Within the SNP Commonweal Group, which is separate to Commonweal, but operates using the policy papers that Commonweal has produced and works out how to fit them into SNP policy and drive forward the changes that Commonweal's policies are recommending. We are pushing for a debate on national care, and that's supported by MSPs. And so we
at the conference
will come forward. Pardon?
At conference.
Well, we will be when conference is announced. At the moment, we're looking, as you say, at a virtual conference, which I think is great because it will give people who are usually not able to participate in conference the opportunity to do so.
I just misunderstood. Are you saying that you're trying to bring forward a debate? Do you mean in Holyrood or at SNP conference?
At SNP conference, if that comes first.
Right, good. I mean, great. But
look forward to that.
Well, I do look forward to that. Where is the SNP's policy group? You know, there's a policy group that's led by Alan Smith. Why isn't it coming up with this? Why is it always something that's not the SNP? Sorry, I didn't mean to go into a big anti-SNP rant tonight. But, you know, I'm listening to everybody. God love us, the Scots have learnt to be people who roll their own, because they have learnt over decades and centuries that the authorities are never on the front line. They're never there.
This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
And then like dark radio.